Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is the Entitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Yo, what up?
Yo, what up? Kids. Hooded Jules Gill on the audio form to describe to the people listening. Almost had a bit of a scansh into that. Now, we've not done this for a couple of weeks. I was away last week.
I was about to say, you can't tell me that I was off when you were off, mate. And that's a bit like, you were on holiday. It's like, no, you were.
That's how much cake and mead I had that last weekend just doesn't even really register on my timeline anymore. But that was why we didn't do one last week.
No just time. For the record, people yes. who are just wondering whether or not that's your legitimate normal diet, it was your birthday. You should probably state that because otherwise mead and cake is just not, that's like the anti-Atkins diet, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't just randomly take Fridays off to go and like devolve into an alcohol and cake hole. But it was a good time. It's a hole that I would recommend. But this is also the Untitled Banter podcast, the UPP, where we ask everybody for their general thoughts, opinions, whatever hell else they want us to talk about each and every week. And so we actually got a massive response this week. I don't know if we'll be able to get to everything this week, but we can roll things on. And if you can hear any background noise, I believe, Jules, you're being attacked from outside.
Apologies, my cat has decided that it's a great idea to now, just as we are recording, to wake up after his elongated nap and knock all of my Warhammer bases onto the floor one by one. So apologies if you can hear the little plinking of plastic.
That's one thing that puts me off getting a cat. I really, really want a cat, but I've got so many things on high places that I think the cat would just be like, right then, I'm going to knock every single one of these.
That one-of-a-kind Metal Gear Solid figurine on the floor.
Yeah, that thing that could easily shatter. My new 120-pound Tifa figure shattered on the floor. I think that would happen immediately. But anyway, first question from Matthias Grimm. What are the top five games that made you the gamer you are today? For them, it's Super Mario Brothers, KOTOR, 007, GoldenEye, Halo, Combat Evolved, and Tekken 3. Love you all. Stay safe. Cheers. Thank you very much.
What a great selection of games.
That's a hell of a selection. I don't know if we have time to do five each. Let's do three each, I think.
Okay,
whichever one's come to mind. Mine, I can do mine, I think, off the top of my head, which is...
I think, can I try and predict yours?
Yes.
I reckon it's going to be Metal Gear Solid.
Yes.
It's going to be The Legend of Zelda, but I don't know which one of them.
Ooh, shout. I wouldn't have gone Zelda, but I...
Oh, did you know I've gone? Okay.
Not necessarily. I'm thinking of like young child me and then teenage me. And like, so I it's definitely Metal Gear Solid. That was the first thing I thought of.
Okay.
And then I would actually echo Tekken 3 because I love a good fighting game. And then I think it would just be... I don't know. It actually might be Halo. It'd be Halo 2, though. It wouldn't be Halo 1.
Because of the multiplayer.
Because of the multiplayer. It was the first time I went on Xbox Live, and I was like, oh my God, I love this. I'm guessing one of yours might be the first Dynasty Warriors, but I don't know whether or not
that's 100%. This is the thing. Like, you did not know the meaning of overexcited until you saw a young Jules carrying a copy of Dynasty Warriors 2, because my Lord, I would actually say, hand on heart, that Dynasty Warriors 3 actually probably did shape my gaming proclivities.
I loved it back then, to be honest. The PlayStation 2 one, the first time I played it, and I was like, oh my God, the amount of bodies I'm sending flying was great.
It was a delicious dishes, mate. I would then also have WWE SmackDown Here Comes the Pain. SmackDown 2. That's the one.
Which one's shut you? Which one's SmackDown?
How dare you tell me to shut my mouth?
Hey, just bring it, mate.
It was attitude, mate. So this is it was Shut Your Mouth.
That was two, right? And then
that was
two, and then Just Bring It was on PS2, and then it was. And then it was Here Comes the Pain.
I thought it was SmackDown 2. God, no, you're wrong. Was the PS1 version
possible?
That's the anyway. No, that's the one. Yeah, I'm
you're,
no,
you're totally right because it was The Rock. It was like, you know, you shut your mouth, know your role, jabroni, all that stuff. Yeah, yeah. SmackDown 2 was a hell of a thing. I just got that working on my completely legal Android software. It's a good time playing as The Undertaker. Yeah.
My final defining game, I want to say BioShock because I absolutely love that to pieces, but I was kind of already in...
Like, I wondered if Borderlands might be one of yours.
Well, Borderlands, I did really, really enjoy, and it was a really special moment playing through that university with my friend Rob. But I'd probably say it's probably got to be Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy VII.
I literally thought of that as you said it. I was like, Final Fantasy VII. That, I'm rescinding whatever the hell I said for my third one. It is absolutely Final Fantasy VII by a landslide. I still remember when I was a kid, like seeing it at a friend's house, and they were on the Midgar Zolom bit where you go over the lake and there's a big dead snake. And I was like, what is this? This is incredible. Final Fantasy VII. I'd have the soundtrack on every day. What am I talking about? It's definitely that. Next question from Sawyer. Will either of you guys be watching The Suicide Squad? I really just want to see a giant starfish and King Shark. I don't care about this. I saw the first one. It was a complete abomination. Now it's all remade and whatever. And I trust James Gunn like more than I guess Warner Brothers, how much they did the David Ayer cut. But yeah. I almost refuse to let the whole corporate do-over thing take off. Like, I'm firmly against this. I'm firmly against Ghostbusters Afterlife. Like, you don't get to play the corporate card. We all sucker into it. And then you go, oh, sorry, we corporatized that too much. Right, we'll do it again. This one's good, guys.
Like, no. It smacks of kind of EA's policy, doesn't it? With the whole loot box shenanigans. It's kind of they'll try their hand, get as much sales out of it as possible, and then say, oh, sorry, my bad, guys. We'll promise we'll do better and then not do better because they just released the same thing under a different name. Mm-hmm. Surprise boxes or whatever they were called.
Like, the only thing that's different here is that it's called The Suicide Squad instead of Suicide Squad. Well, and it's like you're literally trying to replace the old one. Same with Ghostbusters.
It's a really odd one for me because like having Margot Robbie actually return to reprise the role that she played in the original going with a different cast of people, it seems very strange to me how they're applying this. But from what I can tell, it does look like it's going to be a very enjoyable film.
It looks great. King Shark looks so funny. Like there's a proper like Mortal Kombat fatality where he rips that guy in half.
The one thing that I'm worried about is that this might be a bit of a cookie cutter film. Mm. It seems to be ticking boxes that were already ticked pretty hard by the likes of Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's got that real stamp of just like, we've got our funny guy who's big and dumb and says
guys.
And like says one thing. We've got our weird thing. We've got Weasel. Like it just seems like your ensemble casts, they're starting to feel homogenous. They're starting to be like, yeah, okay, I can tell exactly what archetype you're representing here. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that we are going to witness something a bit different when it comes to writing and dialogue. I don't know about you, but I went back and watched Deadpool 2 recently, and I was kind of a bit like, I was a bit like cringing at some of the dialogue that Ryan Reynolds writes for himself. Like it's all the way that he's trying to be creative with his swearing, but it sounds really, really forced. Right, and I just hope that we don't get that sort of like over the top dialogue just so that they can try and put it on a t-shirt or call it a catchphrase. Like,
yeah, like, it's like overly memed or something.
The Rick and Morty, seemingly ironically, seeing as they've gone on and created so many terrible catchphrases of their own, had that sort of like wabba wabba.
All self-aware though, that was all just Justin Roiland being like, I'm gonna make the worst thing possible and then it's gonna take off.
But I'm worried that they're gonna try and do that but without any of the self-awareness.
It's weird because the only reason that we have this movie is, I mean, it's James Gunn who literally did the Guardians of the Galaxy and then Warner Brothers snapped him up and it was just sort of like, okay, you've done Guardians, do that but for us, and the nearest thing we can transplant that onto is Suicide Squad. And like you said, that's the direct comparison. So it looks well made in an echo chamber or something. What do you call it? In a vacuum.
Yeah.
But I personally have a thing where I'm like, you don't get to do this. You don't get to erase the mistake and just go like, oh no, we've done it again. And the amount of money that was thrown, like the Snyder cut, like it's a great cut, but like the mess of a path to get there, it's just insane.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. Ultimately, I'll probably see it, but I don't want to see it at all. Next question from HRP: what is your comfort game? The one you find yourself unconsciously picking up whenever you want to have something that you just know and love. And for me, it has to be Don't Starve, the perfect kickback game. But there's always a surprise in there somewhere. Dunstarve would terrify me, to be honest. I love Dunstarve, but that game, the trees come to life if you mine it, if you mine too many trees, if you cut down too many. So
I find that game really stressful.
Yeah.
Like, it's like to the point where I'm just kind of like, it's so unrelentingly creepy in that Tim Burton way that I'm just kind of like, oh, no, I can't see that being relaxing.
Like, you in terms of like a chill farming game? Because in Dunstarve, I'm always too aware that I'm not hitting the timers properly.
Yeah, but then again, I am thinking to myself that my ultimate chill out game that I could put on like any time at any day is Fallout New Vegas. Like, I would like, so I'm saying that choice of Don't Starve is a bit weird because it's creepy and like things come alive and want to kill you, and give then the recommend stuff. A post-apocalyptic wasteland where everything wants to kill you or screw you over.
I sort of like just have whatever my chill game is. It's something multiplayer. It was Rocket League since the first 5 years, only six. I only very recently deleted that after like 5-6 years, and I've just been on Knockout City. That's just become my sort of go-to multiplayer. But quick shout out to Microsoft Flight Simulator. I don't know if you've played that yet, but that finally came to Xbox on Wednesday, I think. And that
Microsoft
game,
Microsoft Flight Simulator.
This is
so out of there compared to what you would usually tell me to play.
I love the tech side of it. Like, they literally took a global amount of satellite data and then they designed some algorithm that like recognizes houses and stuff. But it's literally the entire world that you can fly around. So you pick like any airport you can leave from. You can go anywhere. I flew over my own house. Like, you can zoom in. It's really, really cool. and if you go on that game and remove all the HUD options and stuff, then you are just flying around in this gorgeous 4K version of the world, but you're in like a Boeing 747 or you're in like a little, like piddly little biplane or something.
Question though, if it's mapped like one-to-one, does that mean that it flows in real time as well? Like, it will take you 7.5 hours to fly from here to America or whatever.
They tell you, it's like there's some formula that works out what it is. Like, you can absolutely fly from the UK to America and like you can go over the sea and everything. But it does have like some formula that crunches time. It still takes a big old chunk of time.
Okay.
I think in game that takes like 20 minutes or 30 minutes or something. But like, yeah, but you can do that. Because I just flew all the way down the country, just from my place all the way down to London. And you can totally do that stuff. And like, yeah, so I've just been, and there's a whole thing in the menu where you can just pick like, okay, I want to go see, you know, like Rio de Janeiro. I want to go to Tokyo. I want to go see Mount Fuji or something. So you can totally do that. And like, yeah, that's been my very recent chill out game. Because you just have to set everything to easy and put unlimited fuel on. Otherwise you're falling out the sky because you've run out of fuel. In theory, it's cool.
That sounds really fun, actually.
Yeah, I totally recommend it. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, great to have you guys back. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My question is, if you and Jules were two of the in-betweeners, which two would you be? My other question is, if allowed, will you both be playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel when it comes out? Now, I can respond to that straight away. I've not kept up with Yu-Gi for a long time. I don't know about you.
I don't know how to play the game. I have my concept.
And we both play Magic as well. We should be able to figure it out.
My grasp on the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game is what was done in the TV animated series. Yeah, and I have been told certifiably that that is not how you play the game in the slightest. Like, there was a video that I watched recently, which was everything that is wrong, or that everything the animated series gets wrong.
Okay.
And my God, was it hilarious. Just watching like how many made up rules they basically had for that series.
Mm-hmm. My thing with that was, I always loved the arm thing that they had. Like, the you could fire the cards.
The jewel gauntlet.
Yeah, the gauntlet thing. And I remember, because I was never really a Yu-Gi-Oh fan, big Yugs, but I was like, I like the idea of it. And I was always like, well, I got the PlayStation 2 game, thinking like, I'll put a card down in game and a creature will spawn out of it and it'll be this really cool thing. And it wasn't that at all. It was just card based. And I think now I would get more out of that.
There was an AR card game. Do you remember it?
Eye of Judgment on PS3.
That was meant to be what Yu-Gi-Oh! Promised, but couldn't deliver because of the technology. I never played it myself. Did you ever get a chance to play it?
No, it was set up back in when I worked at GameStation. It was set up, so I played a little bit with some customers. We had a whole thing where if you could beat us, you could like opt for a discount and stuff. So I'd like play a little bit of it then, but not much other than that. I always loved the technology of it, though. I like the idea of like having the camera feed so that when you put a card down, you see it as something else. I think all that AR stuff is always really cool.
Did it actually work, though?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, it took like a second for it to recognize. It was like a little animation thing and then it popped in what the creature was.
That's cool.
It wasn't as like seamless as like the 3DS's tech, I guess. Like, but no, that was a really cool idea. I think in terms of the in-betweeners, my voice is absolutely failing me today. I think it's because I've done news and then I initially did this If we were in-betweeners, I think I would default to being Jay, but only because he does double thumbs up all the time. Not because he's an absolute mad lad. I don't think that's necessarily me, but I do a double thumbs up all the time.
I think you're Jay's thumbs, but with Simon's brain. Because Simon's sweet and kind and tries to do the right thing. I think that I would be either Neil.
I don't know their names anymore. It's been so long.
Just the big lanky dullard. Or I would. I tell you what, I'd be Neil's motivation, but with Jay's mouth, just very constantly spouting utter garbage.
Like, yeah, you want like the fire of Jay, but well-meaning and not just completely full of it. Yeah. Next question is from Bradley, someone who says, what's your favorite Bethesda game? By the way, your podcast is the highlight of my Friday. Well, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Favorite Bethesda game for me is by a landslide Skyrim, which I know is the go-to. That's the Mario on the roster of picking Bethesda games, but that's mine.
So how are we doing this? Is it a Bethesda-made game?
I would go with Bethesda developed, I think. I feel like we had this question a few months back, actually, but I would go Bethesda developed because it's what they made.
I think it's because we were talking about the Microsoft takeover and what IPs they would be able to get out of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking through the ones
that you can't have New Vegas.
Oh,
that's the thing. When you start narrowing it down, they've not really developed a good game since 2011.
I tell
it's
you
been
what,
a bit of a time.
I will take out of this. Mm. I'll take Fallout 3.
Show.
But I'll only be taking it because of the expansion pack of The Pit.
Okay.
A Point Lookout, because that with that hillbilly bio swamp creature thing, I really enjoyed that because it had like a nice kind of horror vibe to it.
I never did the DLC,
scarier
but...
than coming out of the woods, right? And like, you know, like Fallout 3 is a bit janky, but there's like you would hear like noises and rustling behind you. You turn around, you'd see this misshapen sort of like hillbilly coming out with a shotgun, like a super powered radioactive shotgun. It would be terrifying.
That's so cool. I remember when Fallout 3 dropped, it was like a revolution. Like, I just remember seeing that thing in motion. That was my first Fallout game. I'd never played the old 2D ones or anything. But yeah, I think, for mine, it would be Skyrim, but that's the obvious choice. But I just think that's their most accomplished. I don't think they've beaten that. And they certainly didn't beat it with Fallout 76. So it's got to be.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how they approach Starfield, isn't it? Mm. Because it's like, if it's going to be more of the same, but with better graphics, then I get it will sell like hotcakes. Mm. But after Fallout 76, like, there's a lot of work they've got to put in to get that goodwill back again.
Yeah, I'm curious how much the average sort of consumer, the mainstream audience, just goes, oh, it's a new Bethesda game, and that's it. Like, they don't go like, oh, but this, because their whole internal mandate has changed quite a bit. But it's, I mean, I guess at the heart of it, it is still Todd Howard. It is still, I mean, some of those same people, they've been bought by Microsoft. They don't have to fall back on microtransaction stuff. We'll see. But yeah, Skyrim and Fallout 3.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now we thought we, because usually we do the music minute at the start of the podcast, yeah. But we thought we'll just shuffle it up, just slot it in wherever you want. So this week's music minute is dedicated to Joey Jordison, who's the ex-Slipknot drummer who sadly passed away. He yeah. was with them across their meteoric run across the late 90s, early 2000s, or the entirety of the 2000s. And then he bowed out around about 2013. He was sort of fired from the band, according to him. But he managed to come back, form a couple of other bands. But we also got a couple of questions about Slipknot in general. And we're just going to use this to just talk about some Slipknot. Because a question from Tom, who said, favorite all-time Slipknot song, theirs has to be Eyeless. Also got Steve Ahrens saying, what's your favorite Slipknot songs in memory of Joey Jordison? Theirs would also be Eyeless. Now, Eyeless wouldn't be mine, but I came into Slipknot in full off Duality. I was that kid. It was Duality before I forget when I was in high school and then went back over and got Iowa and got the Slipknot album and everything else. I would still probably go Wait and Bleed because Wait and Bleed live, maybe Spit It Out actually. And I know again,
Spit It Out is amazing.
I know it's an obvious pick, but Spit It Out live at Download was unreal. And I would have to go with something that has that energy. But I love the start of Wait and Bleed as well.
I mean, for me, they chose the perfect song to open their self-titled album. Mm. Sick is just so unrelentingly brutal to begin things with. And there is not a moment where if I hear that audio scratch thing of like, and then it leads into the slowdown for that, and then it just kicks in. That just absolutely woofs your head straight off. I think that's my favorite only because the amount of times that I've listened to it, repeated it, and just felt that surge of adrenaline that is still like the same sense of adrenaline that I get today as listening back when I was a kid.
Do you remember, because I there was a real like fear around Slipknot. It was that whole age of like Marilyn Manson, Slipknot, and oh my god, won't someone think of the children and all that kind of thing, which meant that when you did listen to Slipknot, it had this like aura around it of being like dangerous. It was this, oh my god, like what they're singing about. And there are obviously some like some lyrics that haven't aged as well as the rest of them, but still. What's your earliest memories of getting into them? Were you in from the beginning? Because I was in from volume 3 and then back over.
I think that I might have told this story before, but I went on a school trip to Germany. And when I was leaving, my dad was like really big into making like cassette tapes and stuff like that with like a load of mixes of songs. And he introduced me to The Prodigy that. And they were one of my favorite bands since that point. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the album is called, but it's got like a gray image on the front of a man sort of in a straitjacket screaming. It was before Fat of the Land. And that was just amazing. I then asked him for another cassette, and he didn't have any like that he'd made recently, but he'd just finished making one for himself. So he gave that to me and said, one side of this you might not understand. And the reason is that because on one side it had Rammstein and on the other it had Slipknot's first album on there. Like, I don't know how he acquired this. I won't say if it's a legal copy and source or not, but I remember being on the bus and having my little tape recorder and playing that. And just being like, wow, okay, that was something else. That was, in fact, I remember it being a bit too much for me when I first listened to it, and listened to a lot of Rammstein instead because of the fact that it was easier to get into with its sort of like industrial repetitiveness. Then I went back and listened to it, and me and a friend, like, you know, classically shared the earbuds sort of thing, like one on the other. And we were just both like, wow, this is quite something else. And we both were just like, do we like this? Do we like? And then by the end of the trip, it was like, we love this.
Like, well, that was the thing, because it's like any screamy music, I get that when you're first getting, like, no one goes from the radio to Slipknot. Like, you just it's an acquired taste. You need to get used to it. You need to realize like the technique that's being used to produce that vocal tech, like to produce those vocals. And maybe even, I remember Bees, who used to, he now does like his own solo stuff, but he was saying that you need to think of the screaming or the use of the voice as another instrument. It's just another type of distortion to go with everything else. And that's the thing with Slipknot, because they did that Volume 3 album and they blew up with Duality and Before I Forget. And I would say Pulse of the Maggots is a brilliant tune.
Especially
live. But then, you know, you go back over and they were so unrestrained. Like, Get This is insane. Obviously, Eyeless. And they have, there's so much power in those first few albums.
Yeah. I remember just listening to People Equal and just like, oh my Lord, like they just do not care. Like they
That's the retail anthem. That was like, that was always when I was in Argos, that was the retail anthem.
Yeah. As soon as you close doors for the day, put it on, put it on.
Put it on, guys. But yeah, my overall point with the acquired taste thing is that you should still give them a chance. I think you should give them a shot. What would your entry point be? Because I think I would just say, go listen to Volume 3 or go put Duality or Before I Forget on.
Is Duality is the one with Psychosocial on, isn't it? Or was that
that was All Hope Is Gone. That was what they did after that.
I would actually say that All Hope Is Gone is a great entry point for them, because it's them arguably not at their best in terms of songwriting, but it's like heavy rock rather than heavy metal in places. Yeah. And I feel like that would provide a good jumping in point for people who just like dipping their toe. There's a lot more clean vocals that are in it.
That's a lot more stuff like, stuff
yeah, like, yeah. And there's a lot there that I would say is much more accessible in terms of, here is your slower song. Here is your sort of like lamenting song sort of thing. And yes, there was a lot of like, they got a huge bit of radio coverage because of the fact they toned things down. And I think that's a good place for people to start.
No,
there's no
totally.
Bad Slipknot album, to be
no.
fair.
No, to be honest, the 2019 one, We Are Not Your Kind, love that. I know it's not Joey anymore, but I love that album too. But yeah, Slipknot, brilliant band. Joey Jordison, obviously, rest in power. Dude was unbelievable, like unbelievable talent. And it's a hell of a loss to the industry itself. But go check out those albums. They're brilliant. Mm-hmm. Next question from Vin Van Miel, who says, Ahoy, right boys, then. Which franchise has the best free running mechanic? The freedom of the Infamous / Prototype series, or the structure of Assassin's Creed? Also, which genre from the golden age of gaming, 2005 to 2015, needs to make a return? Now, I would have said Infamous for the free running thing here.
Okay.
I mean, I love Assassin's Creed, but it is so scripted. So I just, part of me quite likes the way that Infamous lets you bounce off anything or like climb up anything.
Do you remember when they released the standalone expansion that gave you the glitching powers from like the VHS stuff?
Was that the horror one?
I can't remember what it was called, but it was like, I think it might be one of the sequels actually that did it. And it just gave you this power to sort of like float on almost like glitches and stuff like that. That was quite cool. I enjoyed that.
I like the feel of that, yeah.
Free roaming for me that has amazing sort of like tactical, sort of a real tactile quality to it was the Jet Set Radio Future. I love like it just going from point to point, like grinding off billboards and moving that way. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could put in Sunset Overdrive as well. That was a Sunset's fun way a to get actually, from A to B and jump over stuff and constantly feel like you're moving.
Did you play the parkour game from like 2007 or whatever it was? You know when parkour took off, when it had its moment where it was like huge, and it's obviously still going, but it was a massive deal. And there was it's either called Free Running or Parkour, but there was a Tony Hawk style chain the moves together parkour game.
Oh really?
I never played that either, but I remember it being a thing. And the other day I was watching a parkour, funnily enough, I was watching a parkour compilation of the best moments in parkour history, which is really, really cool. And I remembered that game and I was like, I'm going to get a PS2 and play the parkour game in 2021 because nothing else is going on. And so like, you might as well. But also a genre from the golden age of gaming that needs to make a return.
I know you're going to choose stealth, aren't you? You're going to choose stealth.
I would do stealth if they could do anything interesting with it. I feel like stealth sometimes boxes a lot of people in. I would go with arcade sports. Because I would want NBA Street, NFL SSX, NFL Blitz, Freestyle. Give me an HD Freestyle re-release. I wish they would do an EA Big HD 4K collection. Like, where is that? I know that they can't because of licensing stuff. Because there's so many songs that they have to go back and sort out. But just do it. It would sell so much. Because that era was so much fun.
I'd maybe go back to the kart racer, because everyone and their dog like had a kart racer in the early in the early 2000s at least, and that genre just kind of disappeared, and I miss a good kart racer, man. Like when Crash Team Racing came back again, I was so happy about that. Admittedly less happy once the microtransactions and the Wumpa coins came in, but still.
I always bought the Nickelodeon kart racer the other day because I was like, want a new kart racer. And because I love that genre too. And then I was just like, what am I doing? I don't need this.
You know what needs to come back in a much, much less racist form? Kung Fu Chaos, right? Kung Fu Chaos, that genre, what would you even define that genre as? No, like a multiplayer battling?
That needs to be a weekly segment. You know what needs to come back in a much less racist form?
Yeah.
Like, whatever you want after that.
You cannot have that many white people doing that many Chinese accents. No. That is a bad look, man.
You want to see when people talk about how far standards have changed and how much we need to be aware of representation and diversity and everything else. Play Kung Fu Chaos, because oh my god, the fact that we let that slide is ludicrous. And it's loved that game when I was younger, but it is insane.
It's the same feeling I get whenever we bring up Hogs of War. Like, I absolutely adore that because it's basically, if you've not played it, it's 3D worms, but with pigs instead of worms. It was a really good time. It was like set in like a fake World War One scenario. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I love the fact that Rick Mayall did all of the voices, but there are some accents that he should never be allowed to do. And any sort of Chinese one, as you can imagine, from an actor with a background in comedy, he really dialed up tones, let's just say.
What year was that like as well? It was the late 90s?
1996, I want to go
with. It was just like full on, you know, you need to do a sort of Asian archetype. What can you do? And it's the absolute worst thing you can possibly think of. So I think those games haven't aged very well.
No.
I would go arcade sports. If you would go car racer, that's a good shout.
Yeah.
Next question from Luke Cullen, who says, "Hey, legends, love your pods. Thank you very much. What is a game that you absolutely loved but can never play again or couldn't play again for ages? For them, it was The Last of Us 2. I adore that game, but it was so harrowing and visceral that I still can barely play it to this day from when I played it on day one."
That is a difficult question because sometimes I play games to the point where I'm just like, I can see the end game and I get bored of it immediately and just leave it.
Okay. You said something that you absolutely loved. So I couldn't class Skyward Sword. I just finished Skyward Sword HD and I hated it. I'm firmly in I'm joining the 10-year-old camp of it's the worst Zelda because it is by far the worst Zelda.
I actually know which one I could never return to because unfortunately I tried to return to it and it was a bad time. Ooh. Jade Empire.
Oh,
like I loved that game to pieces. I played it so many times. I played it through one time fully on the Xbox, the original Xbox, and went back and did it again straight away as soon as I finished it because I enjoyed it that much. I went back and tried to play the PC version that's on Steam, and the controls so janky, man. It's just shown its age in all the worst ways. It's a great game there, but I just was like, no, I'm going to preserve the memory I have of this in my mind and just say that it was good.
You don't realize how much control schemes have changed. Like I went to play GoldenEye and I was like, what is this control scheme? There wasn't even a second analog stick anyway. But like, you don't realize that we used to fire with the face buttons. We didn't use to fire with the triggers.
Right. And that reminds me actually, because we've obviously got announcements that the Time Splitters is getting its like HD remake trilogy combo thing. Pack.
Yeah.
It needs to really address the controls because Time Splitters Future Perfect was the first game you could say played like an actual modern day FPS shooter.
Right.
So Time Splitters 2 and 1, my God, the weird ability to be able to move and strafe, and then when you're holding down the aim button, you aim the gun within the screen you're looking at. I have never, going back and looking at this, it's just kind of like, how did this ever get approved? Like, that is just mad.
I feel like that was like a rare trait. Like, that's in GoldenEye, it's in Perfect Dark, and then obviously when that team split off, it was in Time Splitters, but no one carried that forward. It's not a great way to aim anything. I guess the nearest is like Rockstar kind of do it. When you like zoom in a little bit, you can aim to
a
headshot. The way that they do it just feels really weird. What would be your game that you loved but you couldn't go back in?
Jade Empire. Jade Empire.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
Empire. I can't go back to that.
Final question from Nate Drake. What's your favorite game you've played on the current gen consoles? It doesn't have to be PS5 or Xbox Series. It can be something that is past gen but has been boosted with frame rates and HDR, etc. Now, I just realized that I didn't answer the previous question, but I am going to answer both the same game, which is Knights of the Old Republic, because I adore that game and I keep trying to go back to it, and then I get a certain chunk through it and I'm reminded of how massive that game is, and then I just go, I've scratched the itch now. I've heard the music again. I've done the dialogue interactions. I've made a fresh character. I've got the lightsaber. I picked my kyber crystal, and then I turn it off again. So I love that game, but I, for whatever reason, I can't seem to get back through it again. But that game also looks gorgeous with auto HDR and the frame rate smoothed out and everything else on the Series X. So that'll be mine.
What was the question? Because we rolled the answers into one thing that I got a bit confused. Like I'd had a time skip.
Which is saying, what's the favorite game that we've played on the new systems? But then he says it doesn't have to be PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series. It can be a past gen game.
I mean, I can't answer this. I can't answer this question because of the fact that I'm obviously I don't have an Xbox Series X, nor do I have a PS5. So how do I answer this?
You know, when, because he was saying about it can be a past gen game that's been boosted in terms of frame rates and HDR and stuff. When you play stuff on PS5, PC, you've been playing it in a way that up-reses it, I think.
Like, I guess
if there's anything you've been going back to recently.
Okay, it's Shadow of the Colossus then.
Nicely done.
Yeah, because for the longest time, my guilty... my biggest shame was the fact that I'd never actually played Shadow of the Colossus through to completion. But now I'm actually going back through and playing it on the PS4.
How are you finding it?
Man, it is amazing. The controls are a bit iffy. Mm. I'm finding that the sort of aiming and I keep pressing the wrong button at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. But the verticality, the way that you grab onto the fur and move around the Colossus, I was just like... I was surprised as well that I've forgotten how quickly the game progresses you through the Colossi. Like, mm-hmm. it's not a very long game. Like, nope. it pushes you through quite quickly. But
you pretty much do it in an afternoon, really.
Yeah, man, is it a good game.
That thing, I remember it being, I'm going to be Jimmy Takes because I like Shadow of the Colossus. I thought it was gorgeous. But I just, for me, it was one idea done 13 times. And I was just like, I need... more variety in like the creatures. I like the one that charges you. There's like a dog one that charges you.
Oh, yeah.
I like
the
one with the big beard that you've got to latch onto his beard and then ride that round to his arm or something. Like, I wanted each one to have more stuff to it. But then
too few elements too sparsely. Mm. Like, it would, but the elements that it did introduce were really, really, really fun.
It's totally like worth it for in the remaster or the remake, sorry, because it mm-hmm. looks gorgeous. Like that thing.
Oh, it looks amazing.
Yeah, and the sense of scale in it as well is absolutely... all three of those games, they never did like a full-on up-res trilogy, but Eco, Shadow of the Colossus, and then Last Guardian, that's a great trilogy.
Yeah.
I would recommend it anyway. But anyway, yeah, so I was going to say we had so many submissions, so many questions. We might roll these over to next week. I'll see about... Okay. Because we've got so many awesome questions and we'll try and get some more of them next Friday. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been the UBP.
The UBP.
We'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.